Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network for this Wednesday, October the... What is it, Fred?
Four.
Huh?
October the 4th.
October the 4th, 2017. So if you're listening in a different year, you probably need to readjust your calendar. Ed,
will that solve the problem?
I don't know. If you're listening via a time machine, maybe you need to get back to 2017 so you can listen to this program. Tim Wildman here with Ed Battagliano. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
Walker Wildman. Good morning, Walker.
Good morning.
Walker, before I reintroduce Fred Jackson, who cleared up the year for us, would you please tell us where people can engage with us here on Today's Issues?
Yes, you can visit AFR.net. That's our website, AFR.net.
I would say more than visit. You need to go and live there for the next hour and a half.
Dwell there.
Yeah, need to migrate to AFR.net and stay permanently. And also, you can download the AFR app on your smartphone or smart device. And lastly, you can keep up with us on Facebook, the Today's Issues Facebook page.
Today's Issues Facebook page, we live video stream the show. And you can comment there on the topics that we discuss. Please don't take offense if we don't answer every comment and question on there because, well, we're only four people.
You know, yes.
It's only so much.
Some days I'm only a half.
Right. So it could be three and a half.
Right.
It could be three and a half. That's assuming that the other three of us are complete.
Yes, exactly.
But we love all the people who comment and post there on our Today's Issues Facebook page. Tell us where they're listening. God bless you. Appreciate that. Got very nice emails yesterday about our programming here. I got several from around the country. So if you want to send us an email, you can do that at comments@afr.net, comments@afr.net. If you send us an email, please be like K-Love and be positive and encouraging, because if you know what I'm talking about. If people don't know who K-Love is, they're a Christian radio network that plays music all the time, and they're friends of ours, but they're positive and encouraging.
That's
their motto.
Right.
And so we want emails.
Is that really their motto?
That is their motto.
Yeah, positive and encouraging.
So we want our emails sent to us.
So what does that make us? What would be like our motto?
We're probably cloudy and cloudy and gloomy and Armageddonish.
Realism, real life on steroids.
If Armageddonish is a word, I don't even know. Oh my word! No, we all have different callings in life and in the ministry, don't we? So everybody's got their place.
Educate and motivate.
Encourage. Hey. Educate, inform, and motivate. Fred, yep. That's right. Mm-hmm. That's why we exist, to tell you what's going on in the world, as hard as that may be sometimes, and encourage Christians to be a part, be engaged, be involved, and make a difference. All right, we've got a lot to talk to you about today. By the way, the governor of the state of Mississippi, Phil Bryant, or I should say the Honorable Phil Bryant, will be with us at 10:35, and he's going to be talking about the fact that the religious freedom law that was passed in Mississippi last year, which was criticized by the world, guess what? The Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, which is a federal appellate court in New Orleans, allowed that law to stand. And now if it's going to be overturned, then it must be overturned by the United States Supreme Court, should they even hear it. So it's good news for the governor and for the legislature that passed this law and for religious freedom in the state of Mississippi. This ruling by the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals surprised some people, but basically I think they said that there's been no proof of injury because of the law. And we will talk to the governor about that coming up at the bottom of the hour. Fred, what's in the news?
Well, as we speak, President Trump and his First Lady will be arriving shortly in Las Vegas. Yesterday, he spent many hours in Puerto Rico trying to encourage the folks there. And today, it's a solemn day for the president. He's obviously going out in the wake of what happened there Sunday night, 59 people killed by this shooter. He'll be, among other things, today in Las Vegas. He'll be visiting some of the folks, the more than 500 who were injured, some by bullets, some by people being injured as trying to escape the venue there. So, you know, this president has been through an awful lot over the last couple of months. When you think of the hurricane disaster in Texas, another hurricane in Florida, then Puerto Rico, and then now Las Vegas. And so it's been a tough time, but as many people have noted, you know, it's part of the job of a president of the United States is to be that comforter and encourager, and he is going out there today to do just that.
How many people lost their lives?
59.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was thinking about this earlier this morning because I've watched some news on, you know, Fox News coverage and others, and what read the internet about what happened out there in Las Vegas. But I've not seen, and I've seen a few pictures of the deceased on the ground at the, you know.
Yeah, that was very sad.
Very sad. But I was thinking to myself, you know what? Somebody has to pick up the bodies and take them to the morgue, I'm guessing, and then you're going to have to figure out a way to transport.
You got to identify them a lot of times.
You identify them.
Yeah.
You got to wait on family members. You got to transport their bodies back to their hometowns so that they can, you know, be buried. 50 people? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then you've got 500 plus who were injured. I don't know how many of those are hospitalized, but let's just say 300, 200 are hospitalized. I don't know if it's that many or not. That's overwhelming to emergency rooms and things of that nature, especially in the immediate aftermath of this. So I was just thinking those are things that are, you know, we were talking about gun control now, and we're talking about, you know, what the motive for the shooting was, and those things are appropriate. Those are all in the news. But I'm thinking about 50 people died. You know what I'm saying? 50 people died a few days ago, and there's got to be blood all over the place at the scene of the crime. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's not business as usual.
No,
life as usual.
That's what I'm saying.
And the ripple effects, you know, the whole community, and like you said, I mean, just when you said that, I thought, well, if people are running, you know, that maybe girls drop their purses and they get shot, you know.
Yes.
How do you identify that person? I mean, it takes time. I don't know how you do that.
Family members are calling, find out what happened to their, I haven't heard from. I'm just thinking somebody's got to, I don't mean to be gruesome, but I mean, somebody's got to get up there and clean up all that blood. It's just sobering to think of what really happened here. But anyway, Fred, what do they know? We don't know a motive for why this guy did what he did, do we?
No, but pardon me, authorities there in Las Vegas are hopeful that the girlfriend of the shooter, Stephen Paddock, who was in the Philippines when this all took place, she arrived back on a flight on a Philippines airliner in Los Angeles last night. She is heading to Las Vegas today. She was met by FBI agents. They are hoping that she can shed some light on Mr. Paddock, because everybody, you know, they've talked to so far said, you know, we're shocked that he could do such a thing. And nobody's been able to understand how he's been able to acquire all of these weapons, trying to understand how well thought out this was. 32nd floor, the Mandalay Hotel Resort, and he had cameras set up outside, cameras inside. Filmed himself doing this.
Why would you film yourself if you're going to die?
Well, this goes to his mindset now that, you know, the sheriff there, Joseph, I think Lombardo, I think is his name, he said, can't speculate. There's no way for me to get into the mind of a psychopath. But you just think, well, like your question, if you're pretty sure you're going to die in this, you know, doing this, and you film it, then you're trying to leave a statement, a video statement of some sort.
It was interesting. The girlfriend's name is Mary Lou Danley. She is 62 years old. She and Paddock apparently have been together for some time. As I say, she was in the Philippines. She's back now in Las Vegas. But she has two sisters who live in Australia, and they appeared on a TV program there last night, and they talked a little bit about their sister and what has gone on.
He sent her away so that he can plan what he's planning without interruptions. In that sense, I thank him for sparing my sister's life.
He sent her away. Now, that is a factor that we obviously were not aware of. You remember that in the confusion of the initial reporting that they talked about this woman who might have been an accomplice to this. And then the report was, well, no, she's been dismissed. It made it sound like she was in the area.
Right.
But now we know she was in the Philippines. And what the sisters are saying is that he sent her away. In other words, he bought her a ticket and sent her to the Philippines. Now, he sent a bunch of money to the Philippines in recent months. We also known that. But anyway, this woman who has been with him apparently for some time, the police are just hoping that they can sit down with her and she can divulge to them, reveal to them something about the mindset of Stephen Paddock that might give an indication for motive, because right now they don't know why he did this.
I got to tell you, I think this is what I think she will do, just simply based on what I would do under those circumstances. She's going to, I think, get a lawyer, because what if she comes back and she says, well, he talked about, you know, killing people and doing all this. Mm. And I mean, is there some kind of legal responsibility that is she an accomplice if she knows of his plans? So she may say, well, you know, thinking in her mind, I may, you know, divulge, you know, a few things about where I think his mind was, but I'm not going to say I knew what he was going to do. She may lawyer up. Who knows?
There's a lot of information that's coming out now because law enforcement officials are leaking this information.
Yes.
But I'm looking at a Daily Mail article, which is a European outfit, but they cover stuff more in detail than any other U.S. news outlet I've ever seen.
They always get pictures.
They get
galore.
Pictures.
Yeah,
and
I read it.
These
every
articles
day.
are 3,000 words long. Yeah. And so, apparently, the shooting, the gunfire only lasted between, I believe, 10 and 15 minutes is what law enforcement's saying. So that's something new that we haven't heard. Secondly,
let me interrupt you for just a minute, because yesterday we talked about with Frank Turek that this went on for 70 minutes,
mm-hmm.
70
right.
plus minutes. So what we now understand is the shooting went on for 10 to 15 minutes, mm-hmm. as you're saying. But from the time it started to the time they killed the guy,
arrested him.
He killed himself.
He killed himself or busted into his room.
Yeah.
That was 73 minutes.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. And there's also body cam footage of officers. As soon as this happened, they're saying, I see the gunfire coming from Mandalay Bay. I see the muzzle fire coming from Mandalay Bay. They're saying this on the radio. So some officers knew that this was coming from Mandalay Bay almost immediately when they were looking up at the hotel. So that's something new. Lastly, apparently a hotel security guard, which I believe was unarmed, just, you know, probably had a radio, he went up before the SWAT team, before everybody else, went up to the 32nd floor where he heard the gunfire and was approaching the room. Well, apparently Mr. Paddock, is that how you say his last name?
Paddock.
Had a camera set up outside of the room so he could see law enforcement coming. And he shot through the door and wounded the hotel security guard. The hotel security guard then went and met law enforcement, I guess, in the lobby or something, and said, I know where this guy is.
Hmm.
Then the SWAT team comes.
So now we know how they found out what room it was.
Right.
But like you said yesterday, Tim, you know, and again, we'll find out as all these pieces start to fall into place. you'd think that if there were people on that floor, unless he rented the whole floor, if there were people on that floor, they would have heard the gunfire and reported. So, I mean, these pieces are yet to be filled in. So,
yeah. But we still don't know the heart of the man. You know, we're finding out how he did it, but the why is still not there. That's the big piece.
Well, I did hear last night that investigators had gone to the home and were seizing his computer and electronic devices that they could find.
Because he has several homes, actually.
Mm-hmm.
He's very wealthy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he, so they're going to be looking into that to see if they can find any, you know, where he's been on the internet, who he's been emailing or contacting. Yes, Walker.
Another interesting thing is, according to the Las Vegas Journal Review, I believe. Let me check the source. The Las Vegas Review Journal, the local news outlet, they're saying that the Las Vegas shooter was prescribed anti-anxiety drugs in June. Hmm. And they cite their sources. So that's another factor, potential factor that could have played a part.
Well, especially because people are always saying, well, we need to do more to prevent mental illness. So if he's prescribed this, he was obviously under some sort of care of some sort of mental health.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? There's a possibility here is that the devil got inside this man and caused him to become an agent of evil for no other reason than just to murder people. I'm saying my speculation right now is as good as anybody's, because we haven't heard anything that can be verified that has any substance to it. I've read the sheriff yesterday said, and by devil, if you're not a Christian, yes, I'm serious. You know, for Christians who understand the Bible, Jesus talked about Satan. There is a real force of evil in the world today. Dr. Robert Jeffers talked about that last night on Brian Kilmeade's show on Fox News. He did a wonderful job, did our brother Robert Jeffers, talking about this. But there is evil in the world, and it will be present in the world until Jesus comes back and reigns over the earth.
Yeah.
And ends evil and Satan. But, people can be possessed by the devil, and it leads them to do things like this. Now, the world might look at that and say, well, that man just went crazy. Well, that may be true too, but I don't think I don't think crazy applies right here. A crazy person, as Ed said before, a crazy person goes out running down the street naked, yelling, I'm Santa Claus, all right? A person who methodically plans a massacre of this nature, including which room to book at a hotel, how to convert these guns to be automatic, and all the details that he went to, sending his girlfriend out of the country, all these details that he evidently went to be able to accomplish this act of horror, were well thought out and well planned. That's not the mind of a crazy man, all right? It's a mind of maybe a psychopath. Is that what they call it?
Yeah.
A sociopath, psychopath? Mm-hmm. But it's not the mind of a person. So in that case, this is what I go back to my original statement here. In this case, if it's well thought out in the way that it was, this is a man who is evil. Where does evil come from? Evil comes from Satan, the Bible says. So that's a spiritual explanation for what happened, but I really believe this could be where we're headed, because there doesn't seem to be any mental illness. There doesn't seem to be any, this guy wasn't on meth, where he's, losing it. A meth head would go out maybe and shoot somebody to get $3 out of their pocket to get money to get their drug. He doesn't appear to have any connections to ISIS or any kind of Islamic jihad movement. I'm not saying
where ideology might play a role.
Yes, you know. Yes. Where where I'm not saying that can't be revealed in the coming days if we find out that to be the case, but it seems like to me something would have leaked out already about that, besides just ISIS claiming that he was an agent of theirs, because that hasn't been.
Or, you know, there's no indication he was angry at police, and right. this is his way of getting back.
Right,
right.
He's angry at the system, or he's angry or at the government.
Or went through, yeah, angry about a divorce or something like that. So why would you want to kill a bunch of innocent people,
mm-hmm.
set up cameras?
Yeah.
You know, these kinds of things. So, mm-hmm. anyway, you're listening to Today's Issues. That's the name of this program, Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Battagliano and Walker Wildman and Fred Jackson. Again, the governor of the state of Mississippi will be on with us in 7 or 8 minutes. The Honorable Phil Bryant, the Mississippi Religious Freedom Law that was most criticized by the whole world, was upheld by the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals in New Orleans, a federal appellate court, and now can only be overturned by the Supreme Court, if the Supreme Court even chooses to hear the case about the law. So that's good news for religious freedom in the state of Mississippi, and I think vindicates the law itself constitutionally.
Mm-hmm.
The court in New Orleans, the federal appellate court, couldn't find anybody, said that the people bringing the charges against the law were not harmed and had no standing, I think they said, in the court case. Go ahead, Fred, what's next?
Just one more thing before our break. Yesterday, the House passed the pro-life bill banning late-term abortions after 20 weeks, largely along party lines. But now it goes to the Senate. And
where all bills go to die.
Yes, exactly, because there they have to have 60 votes. They've elected to stay with the filibuster.
It's the Republicans' fault.
Republicans. Yes. We were looking at an Associated Press story at this morning. The Associated Press quotes GOP leader John Cornyn of Texas. Now listen to what he had to say. That's referring to the bill with regards to banning abortion after 20 weeks. That's not a near-term priority. I found that shocking.
That's offensive.
It is.
For a Republican pro-life senator to say something like that. I don't know if he had a bad moment or what, but we're talking about Senator Cornyn.
Yeah.
He's being asked, okay, again, the House of Representatives, and praise God for mm-hmm. this, they passed a law yesterday
mm-hmm.
to say that after 20 weeks, you can't kill a baby because they can feel pain.
Right.
That's right.
Okay. That passed by a wide margin in the House of Representatives.
Mm-hmm.
That goes over to the Senate now. And so in response to when this might come up for a vote in the Senate, Senator Cornyn,
mm-hmm.
who is a pro-lifer,
yes.
himself, but part of the Senate leadership, says what, Fred?
That's not a near-term priority.
Yeah, that's not a good thing to say, Senator. That's not a good thing to say. Don't say that. Say something like, we are going to get to that as soon as possible. It's a very important piece of legislation. When you say that's not, what are you saying? That's not a near-term priority. That means we really don't give a rip about that.
Yeah.
And that's not a good message, especially if you're from Texas and you're a pro-life and you depend on pro-lifers to vote for you. He said that wrong.
Yes.
And he needs to apologize for that, I think.
But is that their truth mindset?
Yes, it is.
They're not going to get
to it. The leadership?
Yeah.
The leadership of the Republicans in the Senate, Mitch McConnell and John Cornyn and the rest of them, yeah, this is their, he's just said the truth.
Yeah.
But he shouldn't have anyway. I don't think you should have been more respectful of the feelings of people who work so hard to protect the innocent unborn babies in this country to say, that's not a near-term priority with us here in the United States Senate.
Let them keep dying.
Well, it's flippant.
Yeah.
And he shouldn't have said it like that.
Mm-hmm.
We will be back momentarily with more of today's issues on AFR.
On the next Today's Issues.
Walker Wildman is handling our Facebook presence in the world.
Yeah, if you have a Facebook account, just type in Today's Issues in your search bar, and then our page will pop up. And you can watch the show there every day, or you can view all the articles that we talk about.
Right, but you can also be our friend.
Don't miss the next Today's Issues. Weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio and on Facebook. American Family Radio, equipping you to change the culture.
Growing up, didn't have much of a male figure in my life. In and out of foster homes, in and out of jails. And no one taught me about anything. And I went to jail 3 times, to prison before age of 19, shot in the chest, had to be chased, the whole bit. And while I was there, I discovered the AFR. And just the men on the shows kind of helped me decide and shape my worldview. And eventually, in December 6th of 96, I asked forgiveness. And I'm teaching my son the value, his value, which nobody taught me. And I give AFR credit.
Your partnership makes a difference. Join us for our 3-day share-a-thon beginning October 17th. Listener-supported American Family Radio for your family.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. Hi, this is Todd Starnes from Fox News, and one of the things I love about Liberty University is the broad vision they have for their students. Instead of simply preparing them for a career, Liberty helps students grow into mature men and women of character, striving to impact their career fields for Christ. Liberty University is the largest Christian university in the world, offering more than 550 programs of study. Visit liberty.edu to learn more. Again, that's liberty.edu. Las Vegas is known for the fast life, bright lights, big money, larger-than-life characters. But all that came to a crashing halt Sunday night in a firestorm of bullets. Life changed in a heartbeat. Shock and horror have now given way to suffering and grief. But instead of seeking comfort in the bright lights and the big money, the people of the desert gathered in a church to sing songs and light candles, to make sense of the senseless through the faith of our fathers. Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Welcome back to the radio program, Today's Issues, on the American Family Radio Network, Today's Issues. Hey, check us out on our Today's Issues Facebook page, where you can watch the show live, or you can comment on the topics that we're talking about and access the stories that we are discussing if you want them for yourself to pass on to your friends, family, neighbors, and fellow churchmen, church people. Church, what do you call it when you're... go to church with somebody, Ed?
Fellow congregants, maybe? Fellow church members?
Fellow congregants, yeah. That sounds like a band.
Fellow congregants?
Yeah. I like a bluegrass band or something. What do you think?
This is one of those things where I'm going to say you're the president. If you say it sounds like a bluegrass
band.
We'll
save that for Friday. We'll save that for Trivia Friday before I introduce them to the stage. It'd probably be inappropriate here on this serious program too.
Yeah.
To do that. Well, joining us in a few minutes, hopefully, is the governor of the state of Mississippi, Phil Bryant. At least he told me he was going to be on. He should be calling momentarily. Abraham Hamilton III is a public policy analyst for American Family Association, also a constitutional attorney, and now has his own radio program called the Hamilton Corner on each afternoon on American Family Radio at 5:05 Central Time here on American Family Radio. Check out Abe's show at 5:05 every afternoon, Monday through Friday, 5:05 Central Time. Good morning, Abe.
Good morning.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing well.
How's the new radio program going for you? You've been doing that, what, now 2 months?
I think, yeah. Yes, about 2 months now. It's going well, I think. I guess what really matters is what do you guys think?
I think you do. Well, I will say this. Now, I was in Huntsville, Alabama last night meeting with some of our supporters. We had a gathering and mentioned your show, and a lot of heads nodding. So they listened. So
right. Did they know who you were?
No, they just kind of figured I was just, you know, a walk-on or something. Yeah.
Well, so those people, they listen to Abe's show, but they don't listen to our show? Did they say anything?
Essentially, this was supposed to be about Abe's show, but you have turned it and made it about your show.
Well, I'm a little self-conscious. I mean, we've been here a long time. And
Abe's longer than Abe.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Did anybody say they listened to today's issues over there? At your
I had lots of people come up and
you
said
did good.
I love
good.
The show.
Okay.
They did.
I mean, we all want to be loved, don't we?
We do.
And appreciated.
I agree.
Okay.
No, they listen to a lot of
all programs. Kidding aside, which will last about 3 minutes, Brother Abe's doing a great job with his new show.
Yes.
And we're so proud to have it on American Family Radio. And we're going to talk to Abe about some issues in the news in just a few moments. But first of all, we have the governor of the state of Mississippi, the Honorable Phil Bryant, on the program to talk about HB 1523, which is the religious liberty law that was passed by the state of Mississippi and has thus far at least survived in the court system. And Governor Bryant joins us. Good morning, Phil.
Morning, Tim. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you for taking a few minutes to update us on this 1523, which is called it. What's the official name
of it? Absolutely. Well, you remember when this started several years ago. This was a law properly introduced by the legislature and altered by the Speaker of the House, Philip Gunn, passed overwhelmingly in the House and in the Senate. And basically, to remind everyone what it does, it is protection of religious freedoms as guaranteed under the First Amendment to the United States Constitution. And it would say that not the state of Mississippi or cities of political subdivisions, counties, could not punish or if you will, interfere with people's deeply held religious views. So if you have a business license, for example, to operate, as we always talk about, that bakery or that florist or a facility that you might lease out, and you say my deeply held religious beliefs are I can only do that under certain circumstances, and the bill's very narrowly defined certain circumstances regarding marriage of a man and a woman. And so we said in the bill that those protections would go to a citizen so that the city or the county wouldn't come in and shutter their business, lock their doors, affect criminal or civil punishment towards them. So it is a protection of a businessman or woman against an overbearing government, because a lot of our cities in particular are now controlled by more left of center political figures, and so they will pass these punitive measures against people who are of faith, or I should say the Judeo-Christian faith. Mm-hmm. Let me be clear about that, because I don't know of any instance where they may say similar laws might be passed or jurisdictional control of any other faith. So, of course, we were sued immediately. And we went to, we've gone to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. We first went to the U.S. District Judge, which put a stay on it. Then we appealed it with the help of a lot of attorneys who are volunteering their time, Christian Action attorneys who are taking this case up. The Attorney General of the state of Mississippi has refused to be a part of this struggle, and so we struggled on to the Fifth Circuit. The Fifth Circuit said, look, nobody's been harmed by this. As a matter of fact, The U.S. court or U.S. judge put a stay on it when he should not have, and no one's been harmed. There's no damage that has been done, so the case is not ripe, so it's improperly before the court. They reappealed it to the entire Fifth Circuit out of the three-judge panel. By a vote of 12-2, the Fifth Circuit not only said it is not proper to be before the court because there has been no harm done to anyone by the state of Mississippi or any political subdivision thereof, and so as of, I would think, about the 6th of October, the law will go into effect in Mississippi. I think you'll see that no one is going to go about terrorizing any particular community or people of different persuasions or beliefs that we have. Christians don't do that. But we will protect the deeply held religious views as the law allows against political subdivisions or the state of Mississippi that would be punitive against those rights.
Governor Fred Jackson here. I read on the Associated Press yesterday that the federal judge, a Barack Obama appointee, I think it's Judge Reeves.
That's right, Carlton Reeves.
Yes. There was an Associated Press report yesterday that indicated that perhaps he's not through with this, that he might go back to a 2014 case and re-enter the arguments through that 2014 case. Do you know anything about that?
We have heard that as well. I have not personally talked to anyone on our legal team, but I think that information was made public. And believe me, those that wish to take away the religious freedoms of the people of the state of Mississippi and the United States will go to extreme lengths to make certain that those religious freedoms are not protected. Now, I remind people that when Muhammad Ali refused to go to Vietnam, he did so saying he had a religious freedom as a Muslim not to go to war, and the U.S. Supreme Court upheld that. I remind people that that the inmates at Guantanamo Bay, though terrorist inmates there, have been protected by a federal court so that a female United States military personnel cannot shackle them. So there are, of course, religious freedoms that exist throughout this nation, have since the beginning of this nation. This is another, I believe, firm legal ground that we are on, but the courts and our opponents in this will continue this fight, I believe, all the way to the Supreme Court.
Governor, finally, want to commend you and Tate Reeves, which is the Senate Majority Leader, and Philip Gunn, the House Speaker. And this is the state legislature in Mississippi. You three gentlemen have led the way on this, and we appreciate it very much.
Well, Tim, I thank you. If we had turned back on this, if we give this up, then what would be next?
Yeah.
We've seen worse in some cities throughout this nation. City councils have demanded that pastors present their sermons or the text of their sermons so that they might see if there's any hate speech in that. This movement is something that is threatening, I believe, the very foundation of the church, and religious leaders need to begin to recognize that this could go further than just this battle that's taking place in Mississippi.
Thank you, Governor Bryant.
Appreciate All right, it. Gentlemen, thank you so much.
Okay, bye-bye. That's bye. Governor Phil Bryant joining us this morning. Abe, what do you think about this?
I think the governor is right in his assessment that people who want to completely destroy the free exercise of religion in this country, that they are committed to fight to the hilt in order to do so. I think that Judge Carlton Reeves is an activist on the bench who has a personal opinion about the matter and who will utilize his position on the bench to advocate his personal opinion. I think that can be that's demonstrated in even his potential reference to wanting to raise a 2014 case in a backdoor effort to thwart what is being adjudicated by the Fifth Circuit. I think he puts himself in a position to face additional judicial punitive measures should he go forward with that, because if you have a case that's already been adjudicated in 2014 that has already been addressed, the potential of stare decisis very well could apply to
now,
that
what is,
case.
What is that?
Stare decisis, I'm sorry. It is the jurisprudential decision made by the Fifth Circuit, because the same Fifth Circuit will govern even the 2014 case. So if the subject matter is germane to the topic addressed in the 1523 litigation, then the Fifth Circuit's opinion in the 1523 litigation would apply by logical extension to the 2014 case. So that is an interesting demonstration of their commitment.
And well, the bottom line is that this was upheld 12-2 by the federal court, federal appellate court in New Orleans, and this is quite frankly, on these kinds of issues, religious freedom issues, we're so used to losing, we don't know how to act.
It's rare territory.
We don't know how to act when we win.
Yeah.
This is great news, and hopefully the Supreme Court of the United States, should they hear this, will, and it's doubtful that they ever will, in my opinion, because you have a situation where the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, which is right below the Supreme Court, those guys and ladies, perhaps I don't know how many are on the court, said there's been no injury, no harm caused by this law in the state of Mississippi, and so we're not even hearing it.
It's my prediction that the Supreme Court will not hear this, will not grant certiorari on this for that exact reason.
So the law becomes in effect.
And should the Supreme Court refuse to hear it, then it does take effect. And the reason why I'm saying that is because the Supreme Court is basically placing all their attention on the Jack Phillips case in the Masterpiece case.
Here's one other thing that I have to say, and then you guys talk about this. We can talk about this. Here's the scenario, folks, that the political left in this movement, in this country, and the LGBT movement wanted to, and rocker Bryan Adams, and the Hollywood, everybody came down on the state of Mississippi, not maybe as intense as they did on North Carolina over HB2, but almost. And then all the pundits said, oh, this is unconstitutional, this law that the state of Mississippi passed. Well, I guess it's not. I guess they were wrong. But what the doomsday scenario they wanted to lay on the state of Mississippi and say, you're a bunch of hateful bigots down there in Mississippi, is they wanted to say this. By virtue of this law, for example, a gay person could go into a restaurant, order breakfast, and the waiter say, before I give you your scrambled eggs and sausage, are you gay? And then the person would have to say, well, yes, I'm gay. Then you need to get out of here, buddy, because we're not serving you eggs, sausage, or toast. Okay, this is the kind of scenario that the left wanted to act like was going to happen in the state of Mississippi. That's just one example for this law. No, what this law was designed to do and does is protect the people that we've talked about, these horror stories you've heard from all over the country, where small Christian business people, this is one element of the law, small Christian business people who have a conviction about participating in same-sex marriages, a florist, for example, does not have to. We have examples, like Baronelle Stetsman in the state of Washington. She's a little mom-and-pop florist operation. Well, she serves all kind of people. She doesn't ask them whether they're gay or straight or Muslim or Jew or white or whatever. She doesn't ask. She just does her florist business with anybody. Two lesbians come in and say, we want you to do our wedding ceremony. And she says, I can't. I'm sorry. I'm a Christian. I can't participate in that. You can go down the street, get somebody else to help you. And they say, that's not good enough. We're reporting you to the state of Washington. They reported her, and now they're trying to, and they their goal, this is the tolerant people now, keep in mind. The tolerant people want to trying to drive this poor lady out of business and ruin her life. That's what they're trying to do. We've met her. She's a sweet little Christian lady. Grandma in Washington just wants to run her florist. A lesbian, a gay person comes in, wants to buy roses or flowers. She doesn't question that. She doesn't discriminate in that way. She just says, I can't go and participate in your wedding because I'm a Christian, and that forces me to violate my conscience. Well, the state law in Mississippi protects the small Christian business owner who in that way. So I just wanted to frame this correctly because the left always gives us, Ed, the doomsday, hateful. This is going to, you're going to be able, now they're going to be able to deny gay people services.
They lie.
Yeah, the volume.
Abe answered for you.
The volume of lies that have come forth from the media, including some of the coverage here locally on this, absolute lies. I think they know it's a lie, but they, because they are personally invested, like you're talking about the judge, Abe, they are personally invested in this campaign to completely obliterate religious liberty on this, on these kinds of issues. They knowingly lie. And I'm going to hold, I'm not going to talk about which media outlet here. When this is done, I'm going to come back and revisit it and say, you predicted discrimination. Where is it? You owe the religious people in this community an apology because you slandered them and said and implied that they were going to discriminate against homosexuals who just want a biscuit at McDonald's. Let me ask you a quick question here, Abe. Fifth Circuit said there was no harm, therefore they sided with HB 1523. Mm-hmm. What happens if a lesbian couple, like the Baronelle Stutzman case in Washington, Tim was referencing? What if they go to a baker, they find a religious baker, Christian, and they ask them to do their wedding, and they refuse because of the protections afforded them under 1523, is that then actionable case? Could it start this process all over again, and then with maybe the Fifth Circuit would have to actually hear that particular case?
Yeah, that is exactly the type of scenario that 1523 was promulgated to protect. And under 1523, they would have to demonstrate that they cannot get that service anywhere. And that's the difference. They cannot just say, hey, this person wouldn't let me buy flowers. They would have to be able to show that they weren't able to get flowers. That is the difference with 1523 than a lot of the other challenges and questions and things of that nature. And because that is the case, I would submit to you they will be hard-pressed to be able to make that because there's going to be somebody who's going to serve them. In the previous cases that have happened, Baronell Stutzman, the case, they've said, hey, listen, I can't do it, but here's a list of other people who I know will do it that's right next door, right around the corner, or wherever.
That's not good enough for these people. They want to punish the Christians for having the belief system they have. That's their goal.
And not merely punish them individually, but also send the chilling across society that says, if you hold these beliefs, you are unfit for public business.
Because what these people are wanting, and I'm talking about homosexual activists, is, and I think I'm taking this expression, this saying from you on a different issue, Abe. They're not out for justice. They're out for revenge.
Absolutely.
They want their pound of flesh. And so if you say no for the cake or the flowers, they don't just simply want their wedding. They want to punish you and take you down.
Yes.
I've got a question for Abe. Because
Does anybody have a question for me? I mean, I'm here too.
Well, that's why we have Abe in. You're showing an awful lot of insecurity today, Tim.
You're right.
Everyone stretch your
hands. I'll ask myself a question. I'll answer it while we are talking to Abe.
Governor Bryant mentioned the example that we have seen in this country in the wake of the legalization of homosexual marriage, et cetera, of pastor sermons being subpoenaed. Mm. That happened down in Houston, Texas.
That was in
Texas.
Houston, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Houston, Texas. But also we have the case of the fire chief in Atlanta who was fired because of his Christian beliefs about homosexuality.
Kelvin Cochran.
He was fired for his Christian beliefs. Does this law in Mississippi protect Christians? Let's say I work for a big corporation at an office in Mississippi, and when I'm asked by the employer, how do you feel about homosexuality? How do you feel about homosexual marriage? And I say, I believe homosexuality is defined by Scripture, is a sin, and no, I do not support homosexual marriage. Does this law protect me from being fired?
No, because this law protects freedom of conscience against government discrimination. So if it's a private employer, then this particular law wouldn't apply, but you also have other federal laws that could potentially apply in those scenarios.
But Kelvin Cochran?
But Kelvin Cochran, because he was the fire chief for the municipality of Atlanta, it was government discrimination. The city government fired him from his position.
So this law would protect.
1523 would have protected Chief Cochran from that.
Okay, good.
All right, I want to ask, while Abe's here, I want to ask you about another situation. In the state of Alabama, there is a town called Leeds, L-E-E-D-S.
Charles Barkley's hometown.
Charles Barkley's hometown. Mm-hmm. It's about 15 minutes east of Birmingham on I-20.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know.
Go through there. If you have to go from Birmingham to Atlanta, you go through Leeds. But anyway, you're right, home of Charles Barkley. Their high school there, let me get this right, Leeds City Schools, their high school marching band, I'm reading from a story here, regularly performs halftime shows at their football games. And in this, you know, these high school bands have a theme every year. If you've ever been to, you know, high school football, the bands at halftime, they perform a program, and they might honor rock and roll or the blues or Broadway or whatever. In this case, they're honoring, I guess, Christian songs or the Christian heritage of America in song. And they do songs like "Will the Circle Be Unbroken," "I Saw the Light," "Swing Low, Sweet Chariot," "Joyful, Joyful, We Adore Thee," "Amazing Grace," and other songs that the band performs. Well, the Freedom From Religion Foundation, which is, you know, the eight people there in Wisconsin that control America, by firing off letters to school districts all over the country demanding they quit prayers before football games, et cetera, et cetera. They sent a letter to the Leeds school telling them, hey, cut it out. Quit singing these Christian songs. What happened as a result?
Or what will happen?
You know what? The school said they're
not going to. Yeah, the school said, well, I'll use radio friendly language. No, thank you, Freedom From Religion Foundation. We have no intention of changing the halftime program. You have a school marching band who's operating not on school time, not during school hours, and extracurricular activities after school that you basically have an intimidation effort by the Freedom From Religion Foundation. The local school said they're referring this letter to their legal department, but in the meantime, they have no intention on changing this.
The gentleman's name, who needs to be applauded, Walker, are you posting this story on our Facebook page? Okay. The gentleman's name, it says Leeds City School Superintendent John J. Moore,
right,
issued this statement. He said, we have submitted the Freedom From Religion's complaint to the school board's attorney for review. We do not have plans to stop this show. Amen. End of quote. Amen. Thank God somebody stood up to this little group in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Because we hear reports all the time on school districts and school superintendents and lawyers for school systems just cowering to this group and not even fighting back at all, just doing whatever they say do because they're scared of some kind of lawsuit, which is oftentimes just a threat or is illegitimate. And this superintendent said, you know what, go jump in a lake.
Well, is the now I don't know how this theme was chosen. If this is student initiated as opposed to the band director, is there a constitutional difference? I mean, as far as the courts have ruled,
as the courts have ruled, yes. If it's something that is, I'll use this colorful language for the sake of discussion, imposed upon the students by the band director, that would place it closer to violating.
Nobody complained about this. The band members. It's what it is. It's honoring the place of gospel music in America, just like bands honor, you know, that next year they'll
Elvis
honor
Presley.
They'll honor Elvis Presley. They'll do something, a tribute to jazz, or they'll do a tribute to Broadway or to Star Wars or something like that. Well, guess what? Gospel music in America has a rich history and heritage and is beloved by millions of people. And all they're doing is singing bits and pieces of some of these songs.
Yeah.
They're not having an altar call.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if that's student initiated, is that okay?
It is okay. And if the students did initiate an altar call, that would be okay too.
We'll be back in 5 minutes. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.